Hey, thanks, ma'am. And whenever we have a quorum, I'm ready to get started.
I'll need to see who's in Anchorage first, because as far as I know, you're the only one that's on right at the moment. So I can go ahead and if you want to call the meeting order, I'll give the roll from my end and then we'll get Anchorage.
We can do that. Mr. Fussy, are we good to go on your end with all the reps in Anchorage?
Yes, we are, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, sir. At this time, I'd like to call the meeting to order. Sherry, if you will please read the roll call.
On the telephone, myself, Sherry Schaefer, Mr. Pete Rogel, Colonel Timothy Meerstein, Mr. Trig Erickson, Mr. Zach Poss. Is there anybody else that has joined us on the phone whose name I have not called? I see Chief Curl.
Yep, I'm here. I'm not on the phone though. I'm on Teams.
Oh, okay. Roger that. That completes my end. Who is in Anchorage, please?
Yeah, Paul Fussy,
David Reed,
John Rockwell,
Jim Woodall,
Scott Stromo,
Brian Barlow,
Joe Pixa,
Nick Bannistock.
Jim Nichols is here too.
Thank you. Sir, we do have a quorum.
Okay, perfect. Ladies and gentlemen, hey, thanks for coming together both in person and virtually as we do this July edition of the Executive Council for ALMR. Are there any opening statements or other announcements before we get started? Okay, hearing none, we'll now move to the approval of the previous meeting minutes. Has anyone had a chance to review the April minutes, and do you have any requested changes at this time? I'll pause for feedback. Okay, would any of the other council members please offer a motion and second to approve the April 20, 2023 meeting minutes?
Brian Barlow. I'll forward a motion to approve the April 20 Executive Council meeting minutes as presented.
Okay, Colonel Meerstein here. I'll second the motion. Are there any objections or further discussion? Okay, hearing none, the motion is passed. At this time, let's move on to old business items. Scott, do you have any updates on the Quantar replacement project?
Just all the Quantars have been replaced right now. They are doing some remediation on some antenna work, and they're on about, I think, site 22 or 23 this week. So it'll be about 75% done with those revisits. We are still waiting for approval for Smart Connect to be able to be added, the FedRAMP approval that we've talked about for quite a while. That will enable some of the features that we talked about before, being able to use LTE connections into the radios, Wi-Fi connections into the radio system, location on push-to-talk data. So other than that, I think everything's progressing as well as we can expect it at this point.
And Chair, this is John Rockwell. May I just add that talking to FirstNet regarding the FedRAMP approval process for Smart Connect. They realize that it's a nationwide issue. You know, I always thought about it personally. What does it do to impact me? And I realized that this is not just John Rockwell or not just Alaska, but this is a federal issue that they're trying to get resolved for push to dock connectivity within LMR systems. They did not have any updates or the timeline, but they did that they're trying to pursue it and make any changes or suggestions that is going on regarding the FedRAMP approval.
Hey, Mr. Stormwell, thanks for the update. And Mr. Rockwell, thanks for the amplifying information. I appreciate it. Are there any more updates at this time?
Sir, this is Sherry. Would you like me to update the title to that since the Quantars have all been replaced and to just change that to the state upgrade project?
I think that's fine. I appreciate that. That's a little bit more representative as opposed to the Quantar replacement.
Again, this is John Rockwell through the chair. Normally, the state upgrade is in the update that is provided by both, all three, SMO, OMO, and South Stormo. And so, in a way, I almost think that Scott, if you give a determination on the Quantar itself, as far as the percentage, we might be able to delete this and then just keep on having the update to it through the standard update process.
I agree that the subject's still a Quantar replacement, that Quantars have been replaced, so that portion is complete.
So the recommendation then is to close this item.
I think so. Brian, for the record, Brian Barlow, it sounds like we can.
I definitely concur with that.
Sir, if you're in agreement with that, I will go ahead and close item A out.
Yes, ma'am, I'm in agreement. Thank you. Okay, moving on to the state interoperability governing body. This item has been tabled, so we can go ahead and move on to the next item. And then the next item is the long-term cost share solution. John, are there any updates from the last meeting?
No, sir, no updates at this time. The 911 working group is still meeting on a monthly basis. They have breakout groups like GIS and such that are meeting on a weekly basis. I believe they will have the report to the governor by the required date, which is December 30th, around there, 30th or 31st. Figure how many days are in December.
Yeah.
This is the last day of December.
Okay. Yep. Thanks for that. I appreciate it. Next, we'll move on to fiduciary responsibilities. Mr. Woodall, do you have anything new to add on this, please?
Yes, sir. We have a 55-page document that's referred to as an intergovernmental service agreement. The agreement addresses a number of areas, and it's being reviewed. There are some modifications that are required as it goes through the coordination process, so that is occurring. It'll go through the DOD wickets and then come to the state. The agreement is the receiver in this case is in from the agreement perspective is defined as the state of Alaska. And it's what DOD is doing but it addresses mutual responsibilities between the two entities. So I think it lacks anything to do with the municipalities, so we have to look at that. I think we'll have to slip some language in there to do that. It primarily addresses a DOD and a state of Alaska relationship from a contractual standpoint, but it also covers other areas such as getting on the installations and so forth for state of Alaska personnel and then related to the contract, in addition to a number of other discussion areas that we had. But again, it's being reviewed and modified and cleaned up, and so it's a apologize for the very slow process, but that's where it is. That's the update I have, sir.
This is John Ronco. May I ask a question?
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
Thank you very much, sir. So as we're going through the fiduciary responsibilities and creating that memorandum of agreement, understanding, I'm not sure which one it is right now. Along with that also tells me that the project should be working kind of hand in hand, but it appears that in the past, it's always been the Fed does this, state does this, two different contracts, two different project managers, two different, all that kind of stuff. Since we've got Motorola here, is there any way that we could cut the crap and say, we want to work together on this kind of stuff, and we don't want to have two different project managers that are not talking, that we could have, you know, someone that can lead this and open up and be transparent with what's going on? Not to put you on the spot, Jim or Joe, but it's something that just ended, like, frustrating me, you know, and you know, I'm hoping that maybe through this contract vehicle that you see we're sharing, as we're not one entity, of course, we're not one funding source, but we're one, you know, system, that like what we've been talking about. I mean, this Motorola P25, you know, we're Motorola number 043 or whatever, and it's one system, whether you're talking to the state, the municipality, or, you know, DOD.
Sure. I mean, I think we should certainly address it on our side too, because it seems like when there's different projects, when the DOD is doing something on this side, the state's doing something on this side, that doesn't affect the other person's system. You know, the DOD is adding three consoles.
Yeah,
big deal. But if it's a system-wide project, yes, we should address it. And I'll address it with the SI folks to say that same thing. I mean, it makes perfect sense.
Okay. We've actually been talking about it internally. It still would probably remain two separate contracts between the feds and the state, because they're two different animals and two different funding sources. But I think, to your point, John, during the implementation, can we do the implementation together? And can we make sure that we're working together and not duplicating efforts? We're going to, we've been talking about that internally. I don't have a yes, so to speak, yet, but it's being kicked around, and I think it makes sense. Especially
if we're elevating it. It makes more sense for us, too.
Yeah, if we're able to get in lockstep, where funding sources line up between the municipality of Anchorage, the Department of Defense, and the state of Alaska, and it really does line up, and the projects can go at the same time, then I think we have a real good chance of doing that. If the state says, well, we need to do this today, and the feds say we need to do that tomorrow, then it gets a little bit different. The feds have asked us for a MAP-type pricing, which is a little bit different than what the state has asked for, which is an SUA-type pricing. But we're able to take the components of each that are the same and put those together in a single project. So I think the answer is TBD, but I think we're on the same page.
Okay. Thank you for the answer, Joe.
And they did that for 2021. It's just a lot of other parts that they did not do that on.
causes us all headaches. I think we're all well aware of them.
For the record, so that no one's confused, that's not necessarily related to the fiduciary agreement, but it is related to the relationship that comes out of a shared contract approach. The state of Alaska is the executor of the contract and is the lead contract agency. So the contractually, Motorola works for the state. And then internally, Motorola has to recognize that a contract executed by the state of Alaska has requirements from the Department of Defense, which is a federal agency. Now, understanding that Motorola is divided into a federal division and a state-local division, that's an internal Motorola issue primarily that drives the issue from a ALMR program perspective or cooperative perspective. We go at it as one system, one approach. I understand Motorola's concern with our dollars not always properly aligning. But we do our best, and one of the reasons we're asking for the life cycle management planning from a financial perspective is that we can be out in front and forecast the cost and then get agencies to do the proper budgeting so that dollars can align. But as we all know, dollars from the state come from the legislature. Dollars for the Fed agencies come from U.S. Congress. Those don't always align. Our fiscal years are different. So there are some complexities. So some compromise on both sides has to be reached, I think, in this case.
Agreed. Agreed.
Right, I'm done.
All right, that was a good update, good discussion. Certainly not an easy situation as we navigate the different timing and tempo for flowing of funds. So, Mr. Woodall, thanks for leading the way there and working with the agencies to come up with an approach. It's taken time to get there, but we appreciate the efforts. Moving on, let's go to radio inventory. So last meeting, I had made a motion for us to establish a method to inventory TDMA versus non-TDMA capable radios. This was informed by agencies, boroughs, and cities, and municipalities moving towards TDMA radios, adding them to the network, but not necessarily removing old radios from their inventory. We discussed ways in which we could help with strategic messaging to inform users of what their inventories were and the timing for transitioning the non-TDMA capable radios off of the network, due in part to an approaching deadline of 2026, and then also the lead time required to buy new radios. After an amount of deliberation on how we would do that, we all made a motion and agreed that we need to establish that capability. And so I'll pause and hand over to looking at Mr. Fussy virtually to see if there's anything from his foxhole that he can provide an insert. He could provide an insight on where we're at with the inventory. And if not Mr. Fussy, someone else as well. I'll pause.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, this is Paul Fussy. So when I've been doing the outreach, I've been talking to the groups, finding out what radios they have, and a lot, there has been some confusion. Some of the older radios, they thought they could upgrade them to TDMA, obviously like the XTF5000. Some of the older Icons or Bendit Kings cannot be upgraded to TDMA. So as I go through, talk to the outreach, get them over to the website, show them the radios that are TDMA capable, what they need to order on there, and letting them know the cutoff time, December 31st, 2026 through CDMA capable radios and letting them know where some of the grants are. Now, the SMO has been looking at different ways to create an inventory. Nick, are you able to talk a little bit on that?
Yeah. So I do have an Excel that can break out the radios that are in the system right now between APX, XTS, XTL, you know, different type of radio types by agency. And from with that, I can tell you, at least with certainty, that an APX radio, whether it's currently or is capable of TDMA, you know, I can get that count of numbers. But as far as other type of radios, that's an unknown. You know, I can't tell you if this particular EF Johnson or this particular ICOM can be upgraded or flashed to TDMA capability. But the APXs and XTSs, those are definite numbers I have.
And aren't those the majority of the radios, APXs and
XTS?
XTS, okay.
Do you believe that?
Go ahead, sir.
I'm sorry. I was just going to ask, do we believe that the inventory is in a format that could be useful as Mr. Fussy is engaging the different stakeholders, that we could use that as a means to inform folks what they have on their inventory and help them to move towards TDMA capable radios?
I mean, it can be. It's a lot of raw data, but most users should know what they have on their inventory. Inventories are done every year anyways. It could potentially be used.
Maybe that inventory that goes out, we can flag it as a TDMA capable or ready radio and a non-TDMA capable radio or something on the inventory. We can figure out a way to make that happen.
One other thing, for the record, this is Paul Fussy talking. So when Nick and I were looking at his list, for instance, an entity has an APX 6000. We know that it's TDMA capable. The thing that we can't look at, correct me if I'm wrong, Nick, but we can't look at is if it currently TDMA is installed on it.
That's correct, yeah. Without knowing the exact flash code of every single radio, or even getting hands-on every single radio, there's no way to determine at this moment whether it's actually capable of doing it.
Yeah, so to clarify, there's no automated means to be able to tell what firmware versions loaded on the radios at this time?
That is correct, Mr. Chair. So we can look at the models of the radio. We can tell you if they're TDMA capable, but we don't know if it is flash-coded, upgraded to TDMA. Now, the APSS folks have been dealing and helping out a lot of different entities with their flash code upgrades. That's been helping us quite a bit. But when I do the outreach, I talk to them about the models they have and ask them if they know when it was ordered. And that sort of gives us an idea if there's a flash code or even if it's encrypted. We have doing some outreach. There's some individuals that didn't know that their radios were not encrypted. And that was part of the outreach job there. So we're working it right now, but this is we're not close to having this letter E closed out.
No, that's good. Hey, Mr. Fussy, thanks. I would just ask that that the user council continue to find a way to revise the inventory and leverage it in the best that it can to help inform users. And then what is the best, most efficient way to update the inventory to outline and delineate TDMA capable radios versus TDMA enabled radios, if that makes sense. Meaning that we may see that that the APX 6000s, but until we go in and however the user council determines this, finds a way to affirm that 6000 has the flash installed it or not, then there's probably a manual update to the spreadsheet. And again, the whole intent of this is to help the stakeholders understand what their inventory is, inform their budgets to execute the purchases really by the beginning of or the end of 2024, right? And so I would just ask the user council to continue to work to this and come up with a solution for the next executive council. And I'll pause for any feedback or further collaboration.
This is Mr. Woodall for the record. I think this information is also important to inform the executive council whether or not the TDMA start date or the date that we've put out as the date in which we are transitioning to TDMA and want everyone to be there is a feasible date. So we really have to know who the number of radios that can be there effectively, and if we're less than 50% or we only have 25% that can be there, then having an edict that you be at that level at that time. Because as long as we have FDMA radios and you're talking to a TDMA radio, it's going to talk at the FDMA level. So, you know, our goal here is to get to TDMA. So we may have to move that date. I wouldn't call it a firm date, but I wouldn't advertise it as a not firm date so that we can have a motivation for those people moving forward so that we can hit that goal. But I would say that this information, as well as it's needed for them, but I think it's also needed for the executive council to clearly understand our ability to reach that goal or whether we need to modify it.
Mr. Woodall, that's a good point. So we're about a year and probably a year and a half out from, I would say, a red line for stakeholders to either make the purchase for those radios or not given the lead time. And so we really need to move post haste to get this information out. I would say at first to inform the purchase from the XCS 5000s to the 6000s. And then also to start that conversation to see if the firmware has been updated or not as well. I don't know. I'll pause to see if there's appetite to move the transition over from the end of 2025 or not. But to me, there's sufficient time to inform the stakeholders to make purchases and upgrades in their budgets. Given our current suspense, we just need to incorporate the current snapshot and strategic messaging to get the collective there. Over.
Chair, this is John Rockwell. I'm also chair of the user group. I don't believe there is an appetite today to move that date. I appreciate what Mr. Woodall is saying. One of the things that we have communicated internally is that we will evaluate the number of FDMA radios at the time, that the date is fixed. The date to turn off FDMA access is not fixed, right?
That's a good one.
So we don't want to move the date forward, in my opinion, and we've had quite a few discussions in the user council because we don't want some to move forward their budget ask, right? To, oh, well, I've got another year to ask, for that funding. And since, you know, it was pointed out in our last discussion that the state is on a different cycle than the feds, which is on a different fiscal cycle than the municipality of Anchorage, my recommendation from the user council's perspective is let's keep the date. I love the fact that we need to be proactive and say, okay, listen, department of or division of or whatever, you know, I see that you have, you know, 20 FDMA radios and 40, you know, TDMA radios, you need to replace that 20 type thing. And I appreciate the effort from both, you know, Paul and Nick, both their office respectfully to, you know, get as close as we can. And then with Paul reaching out personally. So my recommendation is keep the date. And then we'll just have to evaluate whether we actually turn it off or not. Because we've talked about if we have to leave it on for a little while, we can do that.
Now, good input, and I would say the collective agrees that we're not going to move the date. And as discussed in previous executive councils, we're not going to turn users off of the network. But just my emphasis here is just we have to continue with that strategic messaging to inform folks. And the inventory is a step to do that. It's not a perfect inventory. It doesn't necessarily capture 100% what the status is because of the different makes and models. And then whether it has that flash drive or not, but or flash upgrade or not. But I would just ask that Mr. Fussy continue to use this inventory as an opportunity to inform our users and just to foot stomp the need to make the purchases by the beginning of calendar year 2024 to keep us on track with the TDMA transition at the end of calendar year 2025. I'll pause for comments. Otherwise, I'd like to end this conversation and move on. Great collaboration and discussion. I really appreciate it. Moving on. Does anyone have an update regarding AML that was raised by Mr. Woodall at the April meeting?
Mr. Chair, this is Paul Fussy. I have an update if you don't mind.
Yes, please. Sorry.
Okay. So for the group, once again, this is Paul Fussy. So I talked with the AML office down in Juneau, and they currently have 164 members, and they cover most of the communities except for the Fairbanks North Star Borough. They do not have monthly meetings, but they do hold weekly internal meetings to discuss any infrastructure concerns their members may have. They do have a meeting coming up August 9th through the 11th, which is their summer legislative conference. So for their members to discuss any issues or needs that they want to bring up to the legislature for the coming fall. So that's August 9th through 11th. They do have a meeting coming up in December, and that's for anybody to sit in on. That's going to be held in Anchorage. We have added that to our calendar of events on the AMR website. One thing they did recommend that I do, and I have signed up for it, I'm already starting getting their emails, is to sign up for their weekly emails at membersupport@akml.org. So with that, I'm starting to get weekly emails from AML on things that are going on, any grants that are coming up, they're available. And Sherry, there was one that came up, a rural grant that we put on the AMR website also, it's an infrastructure grant. So hopefully somebody might be able to use it for radios also. But they're active, they do have meetings. So that's what I have there. Any questions or feedback on that, Mr. Woodall?
Yeah, the community that is not covered by the AML, were they previously covered by the AML?
That I don't know, but if you look at our members, city and fire departments, other entities, the way it's broken down for our member list, they are under AML, but you have the state, DOD, and AML. So AML, sort of a catch-all for fire departments, cities, and municipalities, where members' lists are. But all they would tell me, without getting in too much detail, was it's political, and that's why they're not Fairbanks North Star Borough, and that's when that conversation ended with that one.
Yeah. So I guess the question is, from the cooperative agreement perspective that we have, does that borough have to be separately listed since they're no longer the signatory for them? Used to be, I suspect, the AML. They are now not a signatory to our cooperative agreement from a governance perspective. It's just a technical question pertaining to governance. It can be ignored or not. I'm just pointing out that if they're no longer covered by AML, from our governance perspective, they would not be covered unless we added them as a signatory to the cooperative.
It's my understanding, I talked to Sherry and I talked to Nick about it.
Sherry, correct me if I'm wrong, not remembering this correctly, but they have their own entities sign for their agreement. It just, when you look at our membership agreements, the fire departments, the cities, and other entities, they're not state or DOD, are just listed under AML.
Right. The membership agreements are appendixes to the larger cooperative agreement. And so it's the cooperative agreement that I'm concerned with here, that from a governance perspective, are they effectively covered under that governance? It's just a question. It's not a, you know, I just.
Jerry, do you have more information on that for me? I'm sorry to put you on the spot.
No, that's fine. I do have your answer. For all of the municipalities, the AML does not sign any membership agreement at all. I think that was
not membership agreement, the cooperative agreement.
Right, but all the agencies that are munis and locals are sponsored by the state. I know what you're saying, that the AML does sign the cooperative agreement, but they don't sign anything else for anybody. The state is the sponsor for all those other entities.
Okay. So for Claire, I'll talk to Mr. Tussey afterwards so that we can get it clear. But I was just bringing it up as a point that we should probably look into to make sure that they are effectively indemnified within the cooperative approach.
Pending the follow-up discussion for the group, this is Paul Fussy. Any other questions under F? That's all I have, Mr. Chair.
Hey, great update and discussion. Thanks, Mr. Fussy. Does anyone have any questions or comments at this time of any of the old business items discussed? Okay, having completed the old business, Mr. Rockwell, would you please update us on the user council?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Many of the discussion items that we have already had and we were going to be having within the additional new business is being discussed within the user council. The only update I currently have is that, as you know, we have SOA, all others, primary positions, and which has been vacant for a year, was recently filled by Scott Nelson. And then we still have positions open from the Army. The primary position has been vacant since October 21, and the JBEAR primary position has been vacant since March of 2023. So we do have some openings within the Army and JBEAR, and we have closed the position within the SOA, all others. All other user discussion items will be covered within new business. That's all I have, Mr. Chair.
Thanks, Mr. Rockwell. Any other questions? Okay, let's move on to the Operations Management Office. Mr. Fussy, would you please provide us with an OMO update?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One thing I want to start out with, training and outreach. So we've been working with Bruce Richter over at CISA, and on the ALMR website, we do have a link, the SAFECOM survey that continues on through tomorrow, that expires July 21st. Talking to Mr. Richter, they'd only had 13 entities that have taken the survey. So we encourage, and been doing outreach, having people actually do the survey. It takes about 30 minutes, but it's really good feedback for the Region 10 for CISA. So I just want to put another plug in for the SAFECOM survey. Like I said, the link's on our website. But that runs through July 21st. So moving on to the video vignettes posted on the website, Mr. Nelson, Dan Nelson's been pretty busy. We have the trunking basics. We did put out how ALMR is funded. We did put another video on using interoperable zones, inventory maintenance, and talk group sharing. We were getting quite a few questions on talk groups, what that entails, and how do people go about filling those out and sharing frequency. So we did a one on that one. Due to the heavy fishing season that's going on, our TDMA Town Hall Part 2, that is scheduled for August 30th at 10 a.m. And right now, in progress, Mr. Nelson is working on the Kenwood interoperability program, similar to some ones of the Motorola that we have out there. I've been pretty busy going and talking to different agencies and groups. May 4th, I did a presentation at the Alaska Fire Chiefs Association. May 18th, I did a presentation for the Alaska Association of Chiefs of Police meeting. They're now done for the summer, so they'll be starting back up in the fall. June 8th, went through the FEMA Region 10 record meeting. July 18th, which was yesterday, we did the FirstNet Response Operations Group demo. Actually, that was the other day. August 5th through the 9th, I'll be down at APCO. That's the Association of Public Safety Communication Officials. I'll be down in Nashville for that. And following that, we will also have the August 9th through 11th at the MTUG meeting, which is a Motorola Trunk User Group. And the next scheduled is August 15th. We do have an ATP set up to do the VK9000 portable. So we've been getting different questions and queries from our user members. So we're working with Benda King, and we'll have that hopefully completed on August 15th, so that's scheduled for the ATP. Any questions on training and outreach before I continue? Okay. Moving on, we did the third quarter newsletter was sent out on July 15th. And with our cost share allocations, all federal non-DOD were distributed on June 14th, and all DOD were distributed out on June 14th, except for the Army. So we're starting to get those back now and starting to sign those for myself and Mr. Stormo. So when we start looking at the project status update, Mr. Stormo's commented a little bit on what we're doing, but the Smart Connect was installed the week of June 5th. That was tested and shut back off after we made some queries, made sure it worked, because we're still waiting for FedRAMP approval. So we just turned it on, made sure it worked, and turned it immediately off. So May 16th, the Juniper router upgrades began at the Tudor Master Site. So the Juniper routers are now installed at the Master Site for Zone 1 and Zone 2. We're still waiting on delivery for more for the other sites. And then TDMA testing was completed June 15th at the Atwood Site. We had the Motorola reps in here working on it, doing upgrades, doing some reconfiguration. And you can plainly see the channels doubled on that website. But as some other folks have alluded to, you can see when the FDMA radio comes on, that two channels immediately drops down to one. So that's more reason imperative that we get the TDMA radios on the system. Because as you're watching at that website, when you're looking at FDMA radios coming on, the two channels automatically drops down to one. So it's going to go down to lowest common denominator. But the TDMA testing went very well, and it was completed on June 15th. Any questions before I move to D?
Chair, this is John Rockwell. I've got a statement, more of a question, if I may. Paul mentioned the Smart Connect, right? We've talked a little bit about the issue with FedRAMP. I just want to make the statement that we're talking about trooper life safety issues here. We have some areas, for example, north of Nikiski, that the troopers fall out of ALMR coverage in very populated areas. That's one of the first areas that we would like to move forward as we continue this project. So we're not talking about just a new feature, function, or toy. We're talking about real life safety issues that we're trying to solve with some of the newer technology. And so I just wanted to reinforce what Paul was talking about, that it's installed, it's tested, it works. We turned it off. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Rockwell. So under D, calendar events. So at the April meeting, Kern Millerstein asked if there was a venue to share the conferences that are coming up or posted to the ALMR website. Sherry and the ALMR office have now created a post on the website. So if you go onto the ALMR website, calendar events, anything that's coming up that affects the radios or anything in the state, we're putting those dates on there and we're adding hyperlinks as they come in. So that has been completed and we're updating it weekly when new things come in. Membership agreements, the changes to the FY24 form were approved and distribution to all agencies for signatures are in progress. So I'm going to move to the June metrics. And there's a caveat that I will start with this. So the June metrics only show zone one data. They do not show in zone two or zone four due to a firewall misconfiguration because of the router integration. Nick's team, Motorola and Genesis are working on the issue. Has been resolved for the most part. So Nick did do a sample testing of the metrics for July. They're showing all three zones. The issue is June. So we're trying to extrapolate the data. It's there in the system. We just can't access it. So the metrics that I'm going to show you are for zone one only, and that's where you can see the drops and everything that I described. So that was, just want to preface that. But like I said, as of today, Nick, he ran a report, complete data for July. So this is only for June that we have this hiccup going on. So if you look at the calls, we're at 1.6 million. Keep in mind, this is zone one only. Our monthly push-to-talks, as you can see, it's dropped quite a bit, 2 million. Our busies were, 1,290. But keep in mind, that's only 0.007% of the total calls. It may seem like a lot, but overall, it's a very small percentage of that. And then our monthly sites below 9 have dropped down to 7. Now, the higher number we had last month was due to the fact we're doing a lot of PMIs, a lot of antenna work. The groups, Nick's team has been out doing a lot of PMI, antenna testing, and there's also the Motorola teams that are out doing upgrades. So the 7 towers that were below the 3.9, Cooper Mountain, because of the PMI, Diamond Courthouse, they were doing upgrades of power distribution and software, Honolulu, replacing brackets and antennas, then with Hurricane, Valdez was PMI, Willow Creek, replacing brackets and antennas, and Walcott with PMI. So there's nothing out of the ordinary that jumps out that concerns me for the sites of below 9. It's your standard PMIs and upgrades. Any questions on the June metrics? And like I said, I apologize. We've fixed the issue, but we didn't realize it until we started getting the data and realizing that, you know, why were the numbers down so much and started digging around. Nick did a phenomenal job going through reconfiguring and finding out what the issue is. So July, we will have the correct numbers for everybody. So I do apologize for that. One other aspect, and once again, Nick did phenomenal work. There was a timestamp issue. So where the time reverted back to 2003,
which affected some of the data. So with the GPS component, they actually have a lifespan of 19 and a half years. So we couldn't figure out why the data was going back to 2003. The GPS components could see all the satellites, we're tracking all the satellites, but it went from June 2023 to November 2003, which is exactly 19 and a half years. So Nick's team went to zone four, borrowed one of their GPS components as their plug and play, and it instantly went back to 2023. So with some reconfiguration on that, and part of the motherboard, Nick was able to replace that. So Nick, to put you on the spot, I apologize, if you could elaborate a little bit more on what you found with the GPS.
Well, you basically stated it already, that the GPS rubidium oscillator was rolling back to 2003. The issue is, you know, as funny as it may sound, is essentially a Y2K bug that is not just one manufacturer specific. It's all GPS units. Once they hit a what's called a GPS week count of 1024 weeks rather, which is 19.6 years, they roll back unless the manufacturer has specifically coded against it. It happens, and unfortunately, we were affected by that. So we are working on getting a replacement part, a newer part. Hopefully, the manufacturer has fixed that, in fact. But yeah, that's the details of that.
So for the group, this is Paul Fussy. So our GPS oscillator is Series F. The one we've requested are using from Zone 4 is Series H. So the software glitch has been fixed. Keep in mind, it was in the background. So the antennas, the calls, the radio transmissions were not affected. It was just the data in the back, data collection in the background was what was affected by the 2003. System worked perfectly. There was no issues with powers going down or radio traffic not being pushed through. It was just the data in the background, which has now been fixed. So I just want to stress that the system kept working perfectly. It was the data collection that was the issue on there for clarification. So, but that won't be an issue anymore. So that completes my report, Mr. Chair, pending any questions from anyone.
Does anyone have any questions for Mr. Fussy on any of these items? Okay, nothing heard. Moving on, we have one item under new business from Deputy Commissioner Barlow.
Thanks, Carl. I don't know if I should really kind of renounce co-chairmanship right now and go into like a neutral status to bring this up. And forgive me if it's not even the right place to bring it up, but I'd like to field an issue here that's come to light within the Rabinowitz courthouse in Fairbanks. Stormwell, you may be familiar with this. And actually, it's a user issue that's been occurring for some time. Within the courthouse, being the type of building it is, there's copious amounts of building materials that are used in there, like concrete and steel, that basically render the use of the ALMR radios useless inside that courthouse. Obviously, we have a number of, or maybe not obviously, we have a number of DPS personnel operating inside that courthouse, to include a trooper or two and a number of court services officers that provide courtroom security, so on and so forth, and provide security and super limited law enforcement coverage for the exterior of the building. And it ranges from doing paperwork and writ service inside the building to providing courtroom security during trials, right down to court services officers being the first on scene to an attempted homicide or a homicide on the sidewalk outside of the courthouse about a year ago or a year and a half ago. So there's a significant amount of work going on there. Any type of defendant outburst or use of force that happens in the courthouse, the court services officers need to be able to communicate on the ALMR system with other law enforcement and troopers in the area should a larger scale response be needed to the courthouse. Right now, that can't happen unless somebody goes out of the building, at least towards the exterior of the building to the point where they can get radio service to go out, or they use boosted cell service, which is not a reliable, really a realistic means of garnering emergency response to the courthouse. There's been an assessment that's been done. There is a proposed fix, and I don't know if this is something that the executive board or maybe another entity, can be provided to me that can evaluate this for determining whether or not this is a maintenance, all or a portion of this issue is a maintenance item for ALMR. I understand there's some funding out there for maintenance of the system, and I don't know if any or all of this issue would be viewed as such. Certainly, I'm not somebody that would be part of any of that deliberation or not. I'm looking to fix that problem. It's been a longstanding issue. It's not to anybody here. I'm pointing to me as the DPS. It's kind of ridiculous that it still exists, and I want to fix it right now. I'm looking internally for funding sources and other places for appropriate funding sources to get this issue fixed as quickly as reasonably possible through the procurement process and getting the actual work accomplished. So any questions anybody has on that, I will either be able to answer them now or do some research and get feedback to the council. There's my issue. I don't know if Mr. Stormo or anybody has questions or further input that might make it more understandable.
How is cell service within the building? You said boosted.
It was horrible or non-existent. There was equipment installed in the building. And I'm going to give you the preschool version of this because that's basically my level of knowledge in terms of the technical aspect. There was boosted equipment put inside the building to boost the signal of cell service. That worked for a period of time. However, as the phone technology continued to upgrade, that they became less and less effective, and they're essentially wall art at this point, from what I understand. And there's in order to get reliable cell service inside the building, then there would need to be an upgrade or a replacement of that equipment as well. So communications of any type out of the building to other law enforcement in the Fairbanks area is difficult at best.
Have you gotten a quote on putting in a bidirectional amplifier and Linky Collects?
I have.
That amount
is right at $328,000-$330,000 to complete the work. So, and from my understanding, the experts involved, that will provide us with ALMR coverage inside the building.
That's correct.
How big is the building?
About 100, just shy of 120,000 square feet, I think. It's a 5 or 6 story building. Again, it contains offices, it contains jail cells, it contains a dispatch center in the basement of the building. It contains numerous courthouses. So it's a court. It's the court building.
Hard to imagine. Doesn't that be the end already?
Yeah.
Now, I know there was for the group, this is Paul Bussey. I know at the Boney Courthouse years ago, it was the same issue, and it was discovered that the antenna was wrapped to keep the signal from going out. And that's when Scott team discovered that, removed that, because that was put in years ago, unbeknownst to people, and it improved it. Lieutenant French would be able to give you better feedback on that one. But that was one of the issues where their portables weren't really working down the basement of the Boney Courthouse. And after that was discovered, that was taken out.
and picked up. I have no idea if it's the same system or not.
Is that the back Chris Carhouse?
Yes.
Back in two,
that has a BDA installed.
Back in 2006, Senator Stevens gave money to put BDA. We put it in the airport. We put it in the courthouses. We put it in the tunnel that goes over to Whittier. So everyone at that time was from a state and local perspective were to identify their need for BDA. We used to have here in the LMO office, Dell probably knows where it was or what happened to it, maybe Sherry knows. There were as-builts for the BDA, and it would have said what buildings the BDA was installed in, and it would have had diagrams of that. So if we could somehow locate that, we would know. And it may be that the equipment is turned off or something's occurred, but I suspect that courthouse probably has BDA.
Somewhere.
I can't guarantee it, but I would have thought that they would have probably have identified that back when that money was available.
Okay.
Now it is a number of years old, so it may, and I don't know that it's touched from a PMI perspective. So that's another thing to look at, I suspect.
The one in the tunnel has been replaced with a newer one. It failed and wasn't supported anymore. The airport one is not in service because the primary use, they're using a warrant out there. So the BHF BDA system is not operating.
Perhaps you could take it from the airport since it's not in use and relocate it. I mean,
that's going to be the old original one too.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Still BHF.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And just another note, if the cell boosters need to go on their AT&T FirstNet, we'll put that in there at no cost to us. So I don't know if we've approached them with that or not.
I was informed when I was up there several weeks ago about the cell booster issue, and that's something that we need to talk with that vendor about and their desire to do that, however you want to coin that. I was seeing this as a separate issue for more really what reliable instant communications need to be for emergency scenarios.
And Scott, you sent your technicians up there to look at.
Yeah, and I hadn't heard of anything that there was an existing
BDA
in there.
So they would have reported if there was.
Okay.
Well, if they can find it.
Yeah.
That's part of the problem with the airport. We haven't been able to find where it is either. So.
Back to your point about the as-bills.
Yes.
Okay.
And if I recall, it has always been a problem.
It's always been a problem. And it's one of those ridiculous things that, you know, we're like, oh, we're going to fix this. And then we hut and do our thing. And then life takes over and goes away. And then, hey, this is a huge problem. We need to fix this. And hut. And it's just, it's kind of goofy in that regard.
Right.
Not to get technical, but I'm at the point now where it's like, we need to stop. This is going to be a disaster if we have a large-scale issue inside the courthouse, and we've known about this for a decade. And that's not an issue for anybody in here. I'm telling you just the history of it.
Because I do recall in 2012 is when we had when we were addressing the Anchorage courthouse, which is post what you're talking about, Tim. So I'm not sure if Steve did some of the state buildings or if they just did the federal installations and then required the state buildings to do their own?
I think the money that came in through the project was PLMR-wide.
Okay.
We identified, agencies identified critical infrastructure that required BDA.
Yeah. Paul, could you reach out to maybe Dell and ask if he...
I'll do that. I'll take a vote for see if I can find any as-builts for any BDAs on there, so... Take care of that.
Yeah. Again, we're going down all these little rabbit trails, which is good. Same time, we still need to fix the problem that we have in the Fairbanks Courthouse.
Yeah, we really need to. So,
do you need the entire 120,000 square feet of the building?
Really, every courthouse, every corridor, every office, you know, like you said, jail, basement, there's cells, there's holding cells and stuff like that. Really, all areas of the building ought to have reliable radio coverage.
Okay.
Yes. It's a fair question. So, at least I created some more work. Paul, you need something to do. So, no, I appreciate it. In all seriousness, I appreciate the ears and the expertise and the great questions and whatnot, so we can get towards a fix. If the determination is made that this is not a maintenance issue in any way, so be it. I'm trying to figure out how to fund this, trying to figure out the full scope of the work, and figure out a plan for getting this implemented and off the plate finally.
One last question. Is there Wi-Fi throughout that building? Is that already in?
Yes.
I ask.
I can confirm that.
Right.
I believe so.
I ask because this FedRAMP project we're working on and we're waiting to get done for this will allow the use of radios over that Wi-Fi or cell phone.
Well, and to tell you the truth, and again, in my infantile way, during the last meeting, you know, we talked about, you know, the project in McKiskey and the test sites and stuff, and went to Fairbanks, and we talked about boosted cell service, and the boosters aren't any good, and okay, well, what if we fix the boosted cell service, and maybe that's yet another site that could use this technology,
mm-hmm.
Which, you know, maybe it could, but is that, for lack of a better term, as appropriate for fixing it the traditional way, for
right.
lack of a better term?
I appreciate you bringing that up. One thing that we'd have to, or one aspect that we'd have to do or look at is the real-life scenarios.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got someone that has an LMR radio, and maybe they do have an 8,000 that they can, you know, use through Wi-Fi, but then they call Fairbanks PD. Fairbanks PD comes in, and they've got a 6,000 without Wi-Fi capabilities. They still need to communicate.
Right.
I've got more information later for you. Okay, excellent. Okay. The other thing I do when I bring up here is the discussion we're having now has been brought up in the ALMR user meeting. And just to get kind of an endorsement of this is a viable project, there was nobody that was saying it wasn't a viable project and a need to fix. The only thing that came up really is that whatever we do to the infrastructure, whether it's BDA on the LMR side or even on the cell side, we need to make sure that we coordinate through Fairbanks Fire and Life Safety for this. So that's just a quick update, but I appreciate the discussions as well.
Yeah, and I certainly do. And I guess so we can kind of leave it at that until we do some research and we find those as-builts, determine whether or not the BDA installation at all, and if so, how elderly that is in terms of the equipment age. And maybe that drives how we move forward or helps me determine how to move forward.
And it could be one solution is not enough, right? So
yeah.
We probably want to look at all solutions and utilize the Fairbanks Courthouse as a perfect test case where we might need to have first net come in for band 14 and have, you know, after the FedRAMP come in with the Wi-Fi solution on radios and then, you know, the VDAs for the, you know, non-APEX 8000s that we're looking at or the next. Apex Next systems to be able to utilize newer technology.
Yeah, any location that can have multiple agencies responding to it is always better to have ALMR coverage.
Yeah.
I've used this example before, but like the Nanana Trooper post that may only have a couple of troopers in it.
Yeah.
If a FirstNet radio or the Wi-Fi lets them talk inside the post, that's probably good enough for that location because there's not likely to be a bunch of other agencies showing up into the
Right. And that's a good point. That, you know, it's a state district courthouse. However, you're going to have state, local, and federal agencies responding there in law enforcement capacity. In daily work or for, yeah, fire, EMS, whether in their daily work or during an emergency response capacity. So,
okay.
So, good initial information. We'll table it. I create homework for a couple people. And
you don't have anybody giving you $330,000 to fix this?
Hey, really? And I'm looking all over the place. At the end of the day, if it's considered, you say, hey, Brian, that's neat. That's a cute question. But no, not any of it. Then that's just fine, too. You don't know unless you ask.
Right.
This is worth 10 cents at Oregon.
So Scott wants to fly to Oregon.
Fly down to Oregon.
Why Scott wants to fly down to Oregon?
He's going to start saving all his bottles.
Grandchildren.
Oh. Yeah. There's three more cents down in Oregon.
Oh, man. The boats are already.
So, get the trash bags in the car. So, minus any other questions on that issue for now, I guess I can just follow up, Paul and John. I'll follow up with you outside of this environment. So, Colonel, thanks so much for entertaining that. And minus any other questions, I'll be quiet on the issue for now.
Do you have a scope for that work for the 307,000?
Yes,
it's written up.
Basically,
can I have a copy?
Yes.
Thank
you. Are there any state regulations that require buildings to have that BDA? I know in other states there are regulations that require.
I don't know.
There's no state regulations for BDAs. We have some boroughs that have created borough regulations. For example, when Walmart built out in that suburb, it was required for them to put a BDA.
Yeah.
Same thing with Target. So Target had to reinforce the BDA because it was already built before the law went into place. And so we are looking at borough laws, but there's no state law for BDAs.
Okay.
Hey, Deputy Commissioner Barlow, thanks for bringing this up. I'll pause one more time if there's any other questions or further discussion on the topic. Okay, nothing heard. Are there any other new business items anyone wishes to bring up at this time? Okay, nothing heard. Moving on, the next meeting is scheduled for October 19th, 2023. Please email Ms. Sherry if you have a calendar conflict with this date. And is there anything else anyone would like to offer at this time? Okay, nothing heard. At this time, I'll accept a motion and then a second from anyone else. Any one of the council members to adjourn the July meeting.
This is Brian Barlow. I'll forward a motion to end the July 20 meeting of the ALMR Executive Council meeting at what time is it? 14:43 local.
This is Chief Curl. I second that.
All right, gentlemen, thank you. The meeting is now adjourned. Thanks, everyone, for your attendance today, and we will see you in October.
Oh.
Have a great Thursday out here.